Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
Why? If it ain't a clown. You know, I never found clowns that funny myself.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And this is a special... Probably a mini-sode. I don't think it's going to actually go on very long, but this is our tribute to the artist Myron Cadell and his 1991 album Angel Food for Thought. It is, I'm sure I found this through you. I'm sure you got this album, and I instantly had to buy a copy of it. And the songs, well, okay, let's start out, actually, explaining the album. Myron Cadell is not, she's more of a performance artist, although she has a wonderful voice. By the way, I'm going to have a little bit of a problem with pronouns here.
Why don't we start this with the elephant in the room? Let's do it this way. So Myron Cadell at the time, and I think we will discuss Myron Cadell retrospectively as the artist, singer, songwriter, Myron Cadell. And we'll refer to that portion as her. But anecdotally, everyone should know and be made aware that she's now a man.
Yeah. In 2003, she pretty much retired from music in 97. And then 2003, she transitioned. And she is now an assistant professor of song lyrics and libretto writing in the creative writing program at the University of British Columbia.
And so I think we want to make the point that when we're speaking to as her as a pronoun, we're not being disrespectful. We just want to clarify that it's her, the artist we're referring to, and not who she is today, who is actually he is today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And let me tell you, I am celebrating the art. This is probably someone who I don't want to meet if I had the opportunity. Not because I would be uncomfortable about the transitioning thing, but because it'd be like, you know, you don't, I mean, to me, Angel Food for Thought is a perfect album. It is absolutely perfect. And it's not a novelty album, although there's some funny stuff on it. And it's not completely music because a lot of it is just poetry. It's poetry with backgrounds that are more or less musical. And we'll get into very specific parts of it. And also, the tracks on this album, there are 20 tracks. The longest is 3 minutes and 40 seconds. And the shortest is, I think, 19 seconds. So it's not even a long album. But it is rich. Absolutely rich. Where do you think you heard this album first?
I heard the track originally on the airplay on the radio. So, because she had a single. The single was the Sweater Song, and that was a hit single, and it was a hit. At the time, in those days, I had just started. I was working at Fred Meyer at those days. It was just transitioning from records and tapes. It was turning into what they called music market, and it was CDs and cassettes. So that was the main sold. And then it sold VHS and laser discs. This is before DVDs, but laser discs were still being sold. But VHS was the primary video, but we had primarily my sales were CDs, singles, cassette singles, and cassettes. Some CD singles, but CD singles were still kind of one of those. They never really hit because they weren't as affordable. And people who were paying $6 for a CD single wanted more than, you know, a song on each side, which is most cassette singles were just a song on each side. And sometimes the same song on both sides.
Okay, but, let me tell you, cassette singles are great. I loved cassette singles.
We sold You have no idea how many cassette singles I sold. I mean, I couldn't quantify it, but tons of them, because every week they changed.
Well, and
we had a top 50. So
yeah, I mean, they were the 45s of their time. And we grew up in a family where our father, being something of an audiophile, he always had a fairly high end turntable and stereo system, and he would buy what were they called? I know he had several albums that were like master recording kind of special editions. And what you did was you bought that album, you played it once, recorded it onto a cassette, and then you just played the cassette a million times until it died or broke in the car in the wintertime when everything goes kind of wonky because of the heat changes. And then if you wanted to play the record again to record it on another tape, great. And you bought expensive tapes. You know, we had Maxell tapes and that kind of stuff that were high end.
Yeah, no, I think it was where I very early learned that, you know, buying more expensive media made a difference, especially when it was, you know, audio. Although myself, I recorded very little, because I went from vinyl to CDs. I really didn't have much of a cassette transition, because I never really had a cassette player. So
yeah, that's true. Your first car had a CD player in it.
Well, it didn't.
Well, it had a CD. What was it? One of those cassette converters.
It had a cassette player. Are you talking about the Cockroach?
Yeah.
It had an AM/FM radio, just like Grand Metallica, because they were almost the same car. But it had a option, which was added, not by me, by the purchaser, of a auto-reversing cassette player. And I actually, as soon as I bought the car, I bought a CD player, and Dad actually helped me install it. So it wasn't a big deal to him. He was like, yes, it's no big deal. But it was one of those... The full CD player came out completely, like all of it. So it was a completely removable. So it was basically theft proof, except that it was the size of a toaster oven.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm exaggerating, but it was like the size of a toaster oven. So you know, every time I got out of the car, it went with me. Like it went in with me to work, and it came in with me, at night when I would go to bed. Very rarely did it stay in the car when I wasn't in the car. You know, because it was like at that, because I spent like, it was like $300. And in those days, you know, that was a lot of money for me. It was still a lot of money for me, but I mean, it was a lot of money for me to spend on the stereo.
Oh, are you kidding? If somebody broke the window and stole your stereo, you would have totaled the car.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, nowadays, like I have a stock CD player in my Escape, and it's good. It's better than the CD player that I installed in my Toyota Cockroach. So, and I have no desire to change the CD player in my Escape, even though it's stock. It's just fine. It's just fine. And since I don't listen to CDs in my car, I listen to my phone. It's also fine. But, to rewind, if you'll pardon the expression, the Sweater Song got some airplay, and it wasn't quite a hit yet, but, Not to toot my own horn, but I have an affinity for hearing music and knowing if it's going to be a hit or not. I was pretty good at being able to gauge kind of if it was going to be low-end popular, mid-end popular, or high-end popular, like where it was going to fall on the spectrum. And I was kind of able to order my inventory and adjust based on that kind of that feel for the sound, which is kind of why I excelled at the job for a while. So the Sweater Song came as a leading single, and I heard it and I was like, no, this is going to be a hit, and I have to sell this. People are going to buy this. And people did buy it. They bought the single. Some people bought the album, but most people bought the single. The album didn't have a lot of success in at least in Anchorage. I think she sold modestly elsewhere in the U.S., but as far as where in our insular little area, not a lot of people in Anchorage really got this album. But I think you have to be of a certain kind of mindset, because a lot of this, like the Sweater Song, she doesn't sing at all. There's no singing.
Oh, no, it's all just, it's a performance.
It's exposition. It is what I think I said earlier was like, I would expect any of these to be performed in the coffee shop and So You Married an Axe Murderer.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we'll get to one that would have been, he actually could have sang it with his jazz trio.
Woman. Yeah. Woman.
Okay. So look, I want to read a review of this album from allmusic.com. Sure. The review is by Stuart Mason. And the review is as follows, quote, sort of a cross between Laurie Anderson, the ironic, winking, spoken word pieces, and Jane Seabury, the ethereal, delicate art pop songs, with just a little of her friends, the Bare Naked Ladies, thrown in, Cadell started in the same Toronto music and comedy scene, and bassist Jim Cregan plays on the album. Miriam Cadell is part confessional poet, part humorist, and part songstress. The most effective pieces on this, her 1992 debut album, it's 1991 or 2, depending on who you talk to, are the spoken word entries, in which she muses on topics focusing on ironic fantasies lifted from bra advertisements, Maiden Form, and toys, Barbie. The songs aren't quite as effective, as Cadell's much more effective with words than music, both as a writer and as a performer, but they're pleasant enough. The album's highlight, indeed probably the high point of Cadell's career, is The Sweater, a tale of junior high dreams and humiliation, that's almost painful to listen to, but also endearingly hilarious. End quote. And I think that actually sets a stage. I'm going to be a little less harsh on the songs because I think she has a beautiful voice.
I would agree with you. Hauntingly so in some cases.
Oh, this album is an album that, you know, in Alaska in the winter, it's dark a lot. And so you end up in the car, at least I was in the car, especially when, you know, I lived, again, in a real city, having a 20-minute commute isn't a big deal. But in my little town, a 20-minute commute is a big deal. And in the wintertime, that 20 minutes can turn into 40 minutes, and it's cold, and it's dark, and you're alone in the car. And some of these songs are downright scary.
I would agree with you. So in some ways, this has the same haunting ability that Poe's Haunted album has.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And yet there are also some really, really funny parts, but all the humor is pretty much kind of biting.
Well, and some of it's you laugh, but then you think about it and you're like, it's not really funny. It's kind of creepy sad.
Oh, yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah, there's just parts in here, and of course, again, with tracks that are like 2 minutes long, I'm not going to play the whole song because I'm sure that would get me into some serious trouble. If I have the pleasure of Miriam Cadell listening to this, hopefully he'll give us a pass on the suing us the crap out of us for a copyright violation, although we are discussing it critically. And so, fair, you should cover us somewhat. But like I said, I'm not going to put a whole song in there because that would be giving away shit that people sell for money. And I highly recommend anybody buy the album. You can buy it from Amazon, but sorry, why don't you go to marincadell.com and buy it from them because it's all digitally remastered and you'll get the video for The Sweater, which, you know, it's worth the price of doing business. All of these songs.
I'm going to just go buy it again now just for that.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, buy two and I'll pay you back. but for real, because, you know, I want to support the arts here. So, shall we go track by track?
Sure.
Okay. The first song is called Secret.
I'm here where I want to be. 7,000 miles from infinity. No one knows.
This is just a straight up a cappella song.
It's quiet here with me. I'm filling in the spaces where the killings used to be. There's no phone. And no way home.
I mean, it starts out as just kind of pleasant, but it's got an edge to it. I mean, like the line that I'm filling in the spaces where the killings used to be. Like, what the fuck does that mean?
Exactly. I think a lot of the tracks are like that, though. You're like, I don't know what it means, but it's it's haunting.
Yeah, absolutely. And she does this thing with reverb, and I think on stage at least she would use some sort of heating duct she would sing into to make that reverb sound. And you know, now this is all be done electronically, but anyway, it's amazing.
This is old school music craft.
Yeah. And again, it's performance art. A lot of these aren't really songs, and we'll, like I said, as we go through them. But it's called Secret, and it's just great and haunting. It kind of
whets your appetite though for what's to come.
Absolutely, yes. In a way that this track number two, Bumblebee is hilarious. It's a spoken poem, a little story. But it's intercut with her singing.
I've met a wonderful man. And I think we're going to have a beautiful relationship together. He followed me at the bank the other day and spontaneously bought me flowers. Actually, he held up the flowers and said that he wished that he could buy them for me, but that he'd left his wallet at home. So I bought the flowers and we laughed and walked and talked and he told me all about himself. I mean, how can I resist? I'm bringing home a baby bumblebee. Won't my mama be so proud of me? I'm bringing home a baby bumblebee. Ooh-wee, it stung me. I probably should have resisted. Never trust a man. Why didn't I read those articles in Self Magazine more carefully? I probably could have avoided this. The man is married, okay? Married a thief and a lousy lover, too. I definitely should have resisted. I'm squishing up my baby bumblebee. Won't Gloria Steinem be so proud of me? I'm squishing up my baby bumblebee.
And it's funny. And, you know, it's about relationships. And so it's got a deeper kind of thing to it. But it's actually a fairly upbeat kind of song.
Kind of. But it's got a line that has stuck with me even to this day out of the song.
Okay, which is?
Married a thief and a lousy lover, I definitely should have resisted.
Oh, yeah. I use that all the time.
Me too.
So, yeah, it's great. I mean, and there are freaking pearls in this whole thing. True gems in almost every song. So, like I said, Bumblebee is great. Then, actually, one more thing about Bumblebee. Oh, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
See, I just love that whole thing. So.
Well, because at the end of every kind of stanza, she approximates the transition with part of what she was talking about. In that case, puking up.
Yes, because she's bulimic. It's all very, it's hilarious. It's a hilarious track.
It is.
Now track number three, Flight Attendant.
I want to be a flight attendant. I can save you all. Look to me for your instructions when the plane begins to fall. Once I wanted to be a nun till I found out what it takes from you. Now I've settled on flight attendant and I know my heart.
This is a straight up poem. There's sound effects in the background, but there's no music. And although online, you can actually find a lot of these songs online in video form, but there are, I think, only two or three videos that are actually music videos themselves that she did. Most of them are like the Pawtucket community dance troupe performing some sort of dance, and then you'll have flight attendant in the background. And it's like, I think I posted on Facebook. You know that feeling when you're like, okay, I'm looking at a piece of performance art and there's like music or something or spoken word, and then there's performance and you know how they're supposed to be somewhat related or interconnected, but you can't figure out how on earth they're doing this or what it means at all. Yeah. I posted a link to a flight attendant dance number. And again, she's very clever with words. She, you know, as a spoken word poet, she really has a nice way of changing her cadence when she speaks and does these little stories. And again, her voice is totally infectious, so.
Well, and there's one point in Flight Attendant where she's talking about, you know, she's, you know, her warm scarf flapping in the face, and you can tell when she transitions and like, ooh, I want to be a flight attendant. Like, she says it in almost this kind of sexual sense.
Oh, yeah. No, the whole performance is
satisfying.
It's so evocative, you know. She changes moods and tempo,
yeah.
And it's fantastic. It's obviously a craft that has been perfected. So.
Yeah.
Next track, Being in Love.
Being in love really sucks. Being in love really sucks.
Being in love is a hilarious song, but it's also very pointed.
I met a boy and a boy met me and we got together and we made a baby and I didn't want it, neither did he, but here comes bouncy baby Julie. And that sucks. A kiss and a hug and a couple of fucks. Being in love really sucks.
I have turned off more people with the song Being in Love than you could possibly imagine.
I don't know how that happens, but I'm laughing. But I will say that, you know, one of my favorite lines of this song, you know, babies cost a lot of money. Please don't make me fuck you, honey.
Oh yeah, it's great. And it was one of those where it's like, oh, you have to listen to the song. And it might as well be having Stephen Lynch's Kill a Kitten song.
Yeah.
It's like, it's something I'm very passionate about, but other people are like, ugh. Or it's like what Cheech and Chong said, that their comedy was like a giant black dildo. Most people are like, ugh, but some people are like, ooh.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this is kind of a bellwether song. Like, if you like Being in Love by Maren Cadell, you'll love the whole album. If you don't like this song, you're only going to like the album.
Yeah. Well, I want people, though, to listen to this album so bad.
I agree.
Okay, so next we have Inventory, which it's the first song that we have actual musical accompaniment. And it's kind of brilliant. And it's upbeat. And it's just kind of fun.
How about that? That was given to me, stolen from a family. How about that? About that? That was given to me, stolen from a family. That was stolen from me. I'm labeling the stuff I got, figuring what I've lost. I'm looking in the boxes, trying to see myself.
And the video that actually accompanies it has a very like late 80s feel to it, almost like the Sledgehammer video.
Oh dear.
With lots of quick cuts and sort of robotic movement kind of camera tricks.
Okay.
Yeah, I posted it on Facebook. You should check it out. Okay, next is a strange piece of thing. It's called Deep Sixin'.
Gotta lose my hand, and my smoke's on the stairs, and my face in the subway train of doom. I'm going deep, sixing, going deep. Going downtown with my Honda bag, shelling my boot, hell in my head, and I'm going sixing, going deep.
She's got this, it's like a beatbox and electric drums that are backing her, and she's reading this sort of like, I guess like a rap almost.
I'm not sure. I have to confess, I never understood this song.
I think she's trying to get into like sort of an urban rap vibe with this. Although it's not rapping necessarily, but it's kind of a, like, again, like beatbox urban kind of thing. I don't know.
I suppose.
Yeah. It's not my favorite on the album, but it's interesting, but it's merely interesting, I think. Next though, track 7. Is one of the more haunting pieces on any album of anything. It's called
Anything.
No, it's called Knitting. And all of my comments, I wrote that it's haunting. The first truly scary song on the album, a poem with an eerie background. God damn. Yeah.
I'm knitting myself a hat. And I'm sewing up a head to wear it on. And I'll never be this lonely again.
Yeah, and the background, I think, is what makes it. If she had a different tone in the background, but it is a strange, ethereal, David Lynchian kind of murder vibe.
Oh, no, but her vocals are so... I mean, even if the background were Calliope music, her vocals are so, like, broken and sad sounding.
Right.
It's so evocative, and it's really kind of, you realize at this point that, oh, this has some dark stuff in it.
It's Laura Palmer in the woods kind of talk.
Totally. Yeah. It's shit you would not want to hear if you're at night in the woods.
No.
Next, though, is an actual song, like a pop song. It's called I Say. The first thing I put in my notes is a guitar. It's a guitar.
I need violent dying. I need quiet time. If you don't believe me as I slide in the sea, it doesn't matter much to me. I lie down and I float nowhere.
It's actually fairly sad.
It's poignant and sad, and she showcases her voice. She is, I mean, some of the high notes, it just sounds gorgeous.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And this would be like the pop single if it were a serious music album. But, you know, the sweater comes in because it's sort of a, again, it's hard to place this. This was a good time, though, for spoken word performance and, like, alternative music. There was obviously alternative music was a good time for that, but a lot of stuff got crammed into alternative. See also Stanley, Son of Theodore. See also Theodore. See also So I Married an Axe Murderer, where we spend the last half of that whole thing talking about music. And if you love our little talk about Mary Cadell, go back and listen to So I Married an Axe Murderer. I believe the music talk starts at 42 minutes.
Nice. Nicely done.
Thank you. Anyway. So, After I Say is a lovely poem called The Wait, and it's a cleverly worded poem. It's really funny, and it's really well performed.
Oh, my love, you are worth your weight in subway tokens. You are the crunch of tires and the snow and the wheedling breath tick of the engine when it starts in the night. You are the click smash of the fork against the teeth.
And, I mean, I still remember, oh, you're worth the weight in popcorn husk stuck between my teeth, and nobody needs you like I do.
That's also my favorite line of that song.
Oh, yeah. It's so great. And then this is a song, the next one, track 10, I've Been Redeemed.
I love this track.
I love it so much.
1974, the year I found God and lost him.
I've been redeemed.
I've been redeemed.
By the blood of the Lamb.
By the blood of the Lamb.
I've been redeemed.
I've been redeemed.
By the blood of the Lamb.
By the blood of the Lamb.
I've been redeemed. By the blood of the Lamb and filled with the Holy Ghost. I am.
I've been redeemed.
I've been redeemed.
By the blood of the Lamb.
By the blood of the Lamb.
Let it be known that I was fairly young and the indoctrination was very strong. It was in my homeroom class every day where I heard about living in torment if I didn't walk with Jesus.
Old Satan's mad.
Old Satan's mad.
But I'm so glad.
But I'm so glad.
Old Satan's mad.
Old Satan's mad.
But I'm so glad.
But I'm so glad.
Old Satan's mad. But I'm so glad. Cause he lost another soul that he thought he had.
Old Satan's mad.
Old Satan's mad.
But I'm so glad.
But I'm so glad.
I love it because I love to sing the song part of it. But
me too. I sing it all the time and people are like, what are you singing?
Oh, and it's funny because when you sing a song like that, you realize that, oh yeah, there are people who attended churches that they sang like this and they focus on that part of the Bible. And
right.
So they bring their own bags on the trip too, you know? So I've broken into, I've been redeemed and people are like, oh yeah, I didn't like going to that church either. I'm like, I just sang a Mary Cadell song, man. But it tells a nice little story, too. That's the thing, is that it takes you to a place. This is one of a couple of different stories, including the sweater, where it puts you into the life of a character. Because the whole song starts out that 1974, the year I found God and lost him.
Well, and you know, the line, you know, telling me to let Christ into my heart. How can I let him into my heart? I didn't even know the man.
Oh yeah, it's great. It's fantastic, and it's again, it's you know, she changes tone from being very, very excited into kind of like wavering to, you know, like wistful. And I mean, it's great. It's fantastically performed. Now, the next one I also love. This is one of those ones where I wanted to be able to say the whole thing from start to finish. From the first time I heard the song, I'm like, oh, I'm going to memorize this.
It's harder than you think, though.
Oh, it is totally harder than you think. It's short, it's sweet, and it's hilarious. And again, it's another character piece because
there is a lot packed into that 43 seconds, though.
I was the spelling bee queen of 1965, man. The principal hauled me out of the grade 2 team spelling bee out into the hall, told me not to be such a pain in the ass, not to be E-R-A-T-E, the other little children. Well, I looked properly A-P-O-L-O-G-E-T-I-C. But inside I was thinking C-H-R-I-S-T.
Quite often I think to myself, but inside I was thinking C-H-R-I-S-T. next is the big hit. And I think this, if this whole album wasn't a gigantic hit in Canada, this song was a gigantic hit in Canada.
It was a pretty decent hit in the States, yeah. But.
So, and this is, again, this is a character piece called The Sweater. It's a character piece and there is, it's not sung at all. It's a poem and it's got sample of like old timey music, like not old timey, but you know, like a, what, like a 50s song maybe or 60s song?
It's jaunty. It's a jaunty, jolly kind of riff track.
Yeah.
Girls, I know you will understand this and feel the intrinsic, incredible emotion. You have just pulled over your head the worn, warm sweater belonging to a boy. Now, you haven't had a passionate kissing session or anything, but you got to go on a camping trip with him and 8 other people from school. And you practically slept together, your sleeping bag right next to his. And you woke in the night to watch him as he slept, but you couldn't see anything because it was dark, so you just lay there and listened to his breathing and wondered if your heart might
burst.
It's
such a great story, and it's got a fantastic punchline. It's worth seeking out, and the video is on our Facebook page. And actually, I'll try to put it on the website as well. So next, track 13, is Job Application. It's almost like a little comedy piece. Like a Newhart kind of comedy piece, because she, you know, in the background, there's this droning voice asking really general interview questions. And she goes between just speaking, like she's answering these questions, to toward the end, she's sort of doing it in a songy, sing-songy kind of way.
Why do you want a job here with us?
I'd like to apply for a job. Yes, the job you have available. My manner is most saleable, and I hope you'll find me suitable for 5:15 an hour. I really have the skills, you see. I've been to university, and though I studied history, I found my heart to truly be in men's ties and socks, glass figurines, the discount shoe industry.
What experience?
What makes me think I'd be good for this job? Well, I love working with people.
Are you bonded?
And I love riding the subway an hour and a half each way. Let's see, add those hours to my day, and I'll be making a whopping $3.75 an hour. No, sir, I do want the job. Can't you tell by my suit?
And I love this song because at one point she says, I'll be the perfect subhuman and never let my contempt shine in my worshiping eyes. So the next song is also one of my favorites, and I sing this a lot to myself. But it's the only song that has an error in it that drives me crazy. I don't really think of myself too much as OCD. Let me check the stats on the website though. It's called The Pope.
People running and horses everywhere. Yeah, the Pope, 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 Pope. We all here to see the Pope, 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 Pope. Well, you got your Pope penance buttons, your Pope clothes, you got your Pope binoculars to see him up close. And I cried when I saw that man in white. I cried much to my surroundings' delight. I cried cause I couldn't breathe anymore. I cried cause people were stepping on my feet. Hey, hey, Mr. Holiness, way over there. Maybe we love you, but we're sadly lacking.
And it's
air.
A little story about when the Pope visited in Canada, and it's great. It's fantastic. and it's got a jazzy piano. Although, at one point, does it sound like the piano is just going off the rails?
Yes.
Like, it's really, like, discordant, and I don't know enough about music to describe what's happening. But eventually, it comes back around. But it's almost like that Tom Waits song, The Piano Must Be Drinking, where they just play the wrong notes quite a bit.
You're just making shit up now.
No. Anyway.
You and Tom.
I love Tom Waits. Someday we'll have to do a Tom Waits album. Anyway, so... oh, come on. Are you kidding?
Why don't you throw it in with some Stephen Jesse Bernstein while you're at it?
No, Tom Waits.
Maybe some Spalding Gray as an appetizer.
No, Tom Waits is a cross between like a torch singer and a Cookie Monster.
No, I was going to go with Ron Perlman. If Ron Perlman and Cookie Monster had a baby, that's what it would sing like.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. I'm sorry. I had to envision who Ron Perlman was, but you're absolutely right. In fact, Ron Perlman should be able to play Tom Waits in the upcoming biopic.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
glad I could put that out there in the ether.
Yeah,
now you know the internet's going to make that happen.
Well, and who knows how interesting. It's funny, to tangent off to Tom Waits land, but you know, you look at videos of Tom Waits and he's got a lot of weird percussion things. Like he will, there's like one of his percussionists will have, you know, a drum kit. The other percussionist will have things like a big piece of steel hanging off of a cable. And then they use like a big, like metal sledgehammer to smash into it to make that sound. And a lot of like alternative percussion things. And also he'll do this thing, you know, I just thought it was like a trick he was doing with his voice, but on stage he will scream the lyrics through a bullhorn. Yeah, I'm glad I saved my money on Tom Waits tickets, because looking just in the videos online, it's like, oh no, this would not be great. I'd rather listen to it, you know, in the comfort of my own home where I can adjust the volume up and down.
So you got one of those like coach having blow horn things with the amplified mic and screams on stage?
Yeah, or like policemen telling the guy not to jump, kind of bullhorns.
Okay, so he turns into the, you know, get off my lawn guy when he's apparently on stage.
It's crazy. It's some amazing stuff. But he's also a really good musician, too, and he's a lyricist. Oh, it's amazing. Anyway, but, sorry, back to Maren Cadell. The only problem I have with the Pope song, and I love the Pope song, I sing it all the time in my head, is that probably at one of the best parts, she refers to him as Pope John Paul III. And granted,
didn't you think that was for the rhyme?
It's probably for the rhyme, but come on, man, you could do better than that.
It was for the rhyme. Come on. Artistic license.
Yeah, I guess, but... Woman. Whoa, man.
Exactly.
So the next track, track 15, this is another one of the ones that it's called Shark Head.
I got heartache in my ribs just as big as the overinflated head on your shoulders. So dramatic, baby. So glad we came to dinner together to watch you throw fits and food. Bartenders are whispering, who does he think he is? Just who the hell? I tell them with my sensible eyes that this is just a bad day for you. See what I do for you?
I kind of like this track.
It's a character piece. And is it kind of my boyfriend's a jackass and I'm just kind of making excuses for him?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's, I don't know, maybe that's an uncomfortable thing. But, it's fine. But track 16, Martina. Yeah, listen to this one as you're walking in the dark at night to your car.
In Alaska, after it snowed.
Pump, pump, blow the dump, the steaming sewers. Take the chance that only chancy chicks would take and cakewalk home with icy breaks of spiky heels and clicks they make and walk through your cold neighborhood, but don't get raped, knock on wood.
Up to blow the dump, the steaming sewers. Ugh.
Yes.
And actually, you want to tangent off for a second to talk about harassment?
Okay.
Well, just because Martina reminds me of this topic, and I won't go into it in great detail, but Jocelyn from Chicago posted this story from, I can't remember what website it was at, about, well, there was a woman who did this thing in New York where she walked around New York and she, there was like some crazy amount of harassment, like cat calls and stuff she got. And the whole idea is that this is what it's like to be a woman. Men don't understand. And the article was like, okay, seven things that you're doing that you probably don't think is harassment, but really is harassment. And it goes on about basically, you know, obviously catcalling is a problem. I didn't realize this until fairly recently in my life, but telling a woman to smile is apparently very offensive. Like, I would sooner call a woman that I don't know a retard before I would ask them to smile.
I guess I'm a bit of a social introvert in many ways, especially because I deal with the public at large. So,
do you ever tell people to smile?
I have never told a stranger to smile. I would never tell a stranger to smile because you don't know what burden they're carrying. And I mean, I think I've told like people that I was dating, like, smile, what's wrong? But I think that's more of a tactic, is like, you know, why aren't you smiling? Why aren't you amusing me? What's wrong with you? Why are you crying?
Yeah, well,
you know, those kinds of conversations. But I can't conceive of the point at which I would go up to somebody that I was in a place of employ, where I would go to a customer or client and be like, smile, because that seems horribly invasive without knowing anything about them as a person.
Yeah, well, that's exactly the point. First of all, there's a situation that apparently is a real thing. I don't even think of it too much, but of course, I'm a guy, so it's difficult. Are you familiar with the term resting bitch face? No, it's a real thing. It's where
I am familiar with the term because I see it on Facebook constantly.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is that if you tell somebody who already considers themselves having resting bitch face to smile, they will instantly go through their whole inventory of shit that you have no right to tell them to do, and, you know, back the fuck off, dude. And, you know,
but according to the internet, resting bitch face makes you look one for lady. Resting bitch face makes your face look young forever.
Well, that's nice. Okay,
or
sorry.
Smiling gives you wrinkles.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, anyway. So there's a couple other things, including in this list, including things like any unsolicited compliments about anything from a stranger is threatening. And then at this point, I'm reading the article and, you know, I want to roll my eyes. But on the other hand, it's like, I don't know what it's like to be a woman. And I realize, again, only for listening to, I don't know, maybe reading feminist articles or something, that, you know, when a guy asks a girl out, the worst thing that's going to happen is that the guy will be rejected and it'll be very humiliating. And that's not great. But when a girl is asked out by a guy, saying yes, the consequence could be that you're raped and killed by the guy. And so that's always in the background. And I'm sure
that's a possibility even if you say no.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like any interaction, because you're in a position of weakness. I don't know exactly. Again, I don't want to try to unpack it because I don't have the ability to.
Oh, well, that's BS. That implies that the women are weak. I don't think women are weak.
Well,
look, if a guy sees a woman, his chance of raping her is the same if he asks her out if he doesn't. Because if he's going to rape somebody, he's going to rape somebody.
Well, and again, the thing that I found fascinating was, so Jocelyn posted the story, and she basically just posted the story and said, this is the best article on the subject I've ever read, or something. That was what her comment was. And instantly a bunch of guys started saying, this is bullshit. And this chick doesn't know what she's talking about. And she assumes that, you know, and so it was like hilarious. Cause of course what I like to do on the internet is, well, I don't know, you know, what I like to do in real life, sort of taunt people. So I try to be the voice of reason. I'm like, you know, I'm reading the article saying, hey, here are some ways that you might not know when you're being a creep. And so that just adds some information or another tool for my knapsack of knowledge that I can take around. And you know what? maybe if I see a girl who has a nice haircut or something, but I don't know her, I will think to myself, wow, she has a nice haircut, and never say a word to her. You know, I can smile, but not in a creepy way.
Oh, you see, that's what I just call being antisocial, which is me. Well, antisocial.
But except that, you know, if I said, wow, you know, that is a great jacket. Like, a girl could tell another girl, hey, that's a great jacket. But if I tell a girl that that's a great jacket, that could be seen as threatening. And again, maybe it's not. And I don't think, you know, the article itself was written as kind of a screed. I mean, it was kind of a rant. But my understanding of the point was that, hey, consider this viewpoint the next time you do this. It's not just the construction worker saying, hey, baby, nice ass, or whatever the construction worker would say. I don't know if I ever tell you the story of my first hours in Mexico. We got picked up at Guadalajara Airport. It was me and the two rental nieces and Lena's brother. And we were picked up by Claudio's brother and his friend or something. And we were all packed into this Suburban with no seatbelts. And we're leaving the airport, and all of a sudden the vehicle stops, and they start yelling Spanish at these girls that are walking along the side of the road. And I'm like looking at Mateo, and he's like, yeah, they're just telling them, you know, how pretty they are and flirting and stuff. I'm like, people do that? Like, oh, yeah, they do that all the time. Like, we're going to stop our forward progress to tell people they have a nice ass? Yeah, that's what they do here. Like, oh, okay. Good thing I don't speak Spanish, because I wouldn't be comfortable really doing that. Anyway, must have been how we were raised.
Wow.
Anyway, so Martina makes me think of that whole conversation, because the whole thing is, you know, pump, pump, blow the dump, the steaming sewers, take the chance the only chance you chicks would take, and cakewalk home, you know, with icy breaks and of spiky heels and clicks they make, and walk through your cold neighborhood, but don't get raped, knock on wood.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all, you know, that's what that whole thing is about.
It's kind of sad commentary.
It is, but, you know, again, I don't have... Not being a woman, I don't have a frame of reference for this kind of thing. So, in pretty much any time you hear footsteps behind you, it's creepy. So, anyway. Plus, it puts you in that place. A very short song that puts you in a very specific place in somebody's head.
It's very illustrative.
Yeah, I agree. So, track 17, Maiden Form.
I dreamt I won the lottery in my maiden form bra.
This is a very clever song, because, or piece, really. Because you've got Miriam Cadell's kind of normal, or kind of, you know, like flat to almost down tone, saying, I dreamt I won the lottery in my maiden form bra. And then just like a half a second after, you hear it repeated, but in a much cheery, like pageant queen kind of voice.
Yeah, to the back tune of the Mockingbird song, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. Because the whole thing ends with the Hush Little Baby being hummed.
I dreamed I won the lottery in my maiden form bra.
I won the lottery in my maiden form bra.
And my husband said I should buy stocks and bonds.
And bonds.
And my kids said I should buy a boat and an amusement park.
And my
mom said I should just take a nice vacation.
The background narrative doesn't exactly match the foreground narrative.
Exactly. That's the very clever part of it. That's the totally clever part of it. Because the woman in the foreground is using the same words to tell a different story than the woman in the background. And I just think that's awesome. Let's see. Okay. Song number 18. It's called Confide. It's the second real song. Again, it's not really my style of music, but it's very interesting.
Inside, you will die.
pretty song.
And it's got some sort of darkish lyrics.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a trademark.
Yes. I want to back up for a second. 18, sorry. I'm sorry, track 18, which is Confide, to me, is almost a Toe the Wet Sprocket song.
I can see that. Absolutely.
So if it weren't her, it would be Toe the Wet Sprocket. So if you're a fan of Toe the Wet Sprocket, this would totally be one of their songs. If it's, you know.
Yeah. What was the, what's the rape song?
Hold Her Down.
Hold Her Down. Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of, yeah. Haunting song also.
Which I have to be careful. I didn't realize that I was singing it when I was singing it, where I was singing it, because I was singing it out in public. And I was like, ooh, I don't think I can sing this song out in public anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's tricky.
No, tricky is a different order.
That's true. Yeah.
The fifth element, multipass.
Yes. Again, it turns out I'd rather listen to Tricky speak than sing, but that's just me.
I understand. Yes. So track 19 close is kind of just social commentary.
Yeah. And it's just, like I said, a one liner. I don't even know if I'll put a clip in it because the whole thing is what, like 19 seconds or 14 seconds or something?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I can't even abbreviate a 14 second track. But then we get to song 20. Okay. This song, it's an a cappella song, and it is so goddamn sad.
It is.
It, to me, it reminds me of Tori Amos's Me and a Gun.
Okay.
Except it's about Barbies.
It is a very, very poignantly sad song. You can, unless you're broken inside, which I am, but... you will feel the song. I mean, this song will affect you in multiple ways.
And it doesn't stop. I wanted to quote, take shelter, unquote, because it, at the very end, you know, you already know where you're going and you get there and then it keeps going. And you're like, oh, so sad.
I'm older now, but I still think of Barbie. I got my own brown boyfriend, Ken. But my little room's pretty far from Barbie's dream home. And plastic dolls can't make calls, so Ken never phones. Malibu beach parties, how come I still can never go? Barbie, you had it all together, how come you always knew what to do? Barbie, you had it all together. I wanted to live with you, and I still want to live like you. Barbie.
So, you haven't, you've never listened to Bombazine?
Well, I think I've listened to it. I listened to it at the time that it came out and was like, meh. And then I listened to a couple of tracks, like on YouTube or something, played live. And, you know, they're fine. But nothing that hooked me. Like, you know, Secret or I've Been Redeemed.
You ought to go back and listen to it.
Okay. Well, I could definitely.
She sings a lot more on the album. Because a couple of tracks are just really, really good. I mean, they don't have kind of the same bitey, kind of poignant, biting, emotional edge that some of them did, but some of them are still kind of pretty good. Because the opening track is interesting, because the opening track is a song about gay bashing, which is apparently was at least in Maren Cadell's mind at the time, but she's actually singing, but it has kind of a 50s feel. And then The Time of Our Lives, which is track two, is kind of this strange, it's kind of a rocking, raucous kind of bar song, old like a 70s, 80s bar song, a Western bar would have playing. But track three, which is Curb, is about, like, don't, you know, make sure that if you get in a fight with your boyfriend and you dump him off the side of the road, it's not rush hour because you can't squeal away in your car if it's rush hour, which is kind of brilliant and hilarious.
Oh, that is funny.
But then there's track four, which is Janet Clark, which is, I don't know if Janet Clark is real or not. Because there's a couple tracks on here that I can't, and I didn't, haven't done any research, of course, but like, I don't know if the people that she mentions are real or if these are just complete manifestations of her artistry, which may be brilliant. But the song on track four, which is Janet Clark, which is about a bank robber, and it's kind of a love song to the bank robber from the woman that got robbed.
Oh, that's funny stuff.
It's a strange song, but it's kind of brilliant and genius. So, but then there's the fifth track, which is Georgian Bay, is a very kind of haunting, melodic, song about, it has some maritime implication, but it's kind of this dark loss, song about loss. So, and then there's a couple, there's more tracks.
Hold on. I have to stop for just a second to point out that you said the phrase that I think it's brilliant. I really am celebrating you. But you said it was a song that had maritime implications.
Yeah.
I love that. That whole phrase. If I can use that once a day, I'd be a happy man.
Maritime implications?
No, it's perfect. It's right. It's absolutely right. But I just love the two words together makes me smile.
Well, I'm glad. It wasn't alliterative, though. It was just descriptive.
Yeah. No, it's just great. I love it. It's making me smile.
Well, hopefully you knew exactly what I was alluding to.
Oh, no, I know exactly what you, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, no, like I said, it was artfully done. I'm just saying that I wanted to stop and rejoice in your artistry.
Sometimes I am too succinct in my syntax.
Yeah. Well, no, it's, yeah, you're fine. You have the eloquence of soliloquy.
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes I just.
Well. Yeah. Is it Steve Martin? Some people have a way with words, others not have way.
Exactly. And then there's track eight, which is Abilene, which is this strange song about a woman dying, which is, they're singing and haunting melody, and it's almost kind of a, it's kind of a dark, Dear Clementine, oh Clementine, dear Clementine, I forget the song.
But oh my darling, oh my darling, oh my darling Clementine.
Exactly. Kind of, except this is kind of hard to wrap your head around. But it's a dark song, but it's pretty. So there's a couple of that on here. But then I said one of my favorite tracks is Super, because it's about shopping in a supermarket, and it's so metaphorical. It's hilarious because she throws in all kinds of these things that you would, as a grocery shopper, that you deal with and you see, but she has this experience where she likes to go grocery shopping, and it's her own little secret thing because she's got coupons and she can go to the frozen food aisle and it's all shiny and silver and it's just mesmerizing. And then she's got all these coupons that she can save money with. And she's got a wallet full of cash, and she's just happy to be in this little world. And she gets so worked up, she can go to the cash register and pay for everything. And instead of paying cash, she charges it.
See, that's the beauty of Maren Cadell.
Exactly. And so I think that's what makes it one of the, you know, that's a great track. And then there's Window of Opportunity, which is track 10, which is, got a great, to me, she's got a very kind of Katie Lang cadence. And some great kind of.
Now, what was that Katie Lang song that you had me listen to compare?
So It Will Be, I Believe. Yeah. And I just think because her voice has the same richness kind of as Katie Lang. So that's why I kind of liked it. And Window of Opportunity is a great song because it kind of talks about, it's about her breaking out of being a conformist and kind of doing the wrong thing. Then people thought she was a nice girl, but she's a nice girl that does lots of bad things. So it's kind of, you know, I kind of like that. And then there's the next track, which is Bark on the Tree, which is kind of a very sad relationship song. Because one of the choruses is, I wonder who's washing your dishes now.
Oh my God.
And it's, and you're laughing, but it's so sad.
Oh, I know.
If you've ever had a horrible failed relationship, like, ooh, this brings you back. So, of course, I've never really had anybody wash my dishes, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm kind of a little OCD about my dishes, so nobody washes my dishes either.
My dishes are very sterile before they go into the dishwasher. The dishwasher is just a big sterilization device.
Exactly. Yeah.
And make sure everything is sterile.
Yeah. I don't know where we got that from, but we got it.
And then there's the voice of Gloria, which I don't understand, track 12, I will admit. And then the second to last track, which is Mirror Room, which is just kind of, it's kind of like knitting a little bit, except it's not creepy enough, but it's got that same kind of thing. But the closing track is Strength, which again is really showcases her beautiful voice and range, but is kind of a sad song about just being inadequate.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They're all sad songs, people.
Yeah. No, they really are. And there's another album that I don't have, apparently, because iTunes was just like, you should buy this. And I was like, if I bought things, I might, but I'm not going to. So.
Yeah, well, I think she put out several albums, like more than the ones that we could get, probably. Maybe they're more available, or they were more available in Canada.
Possibly.
Because you know, the one thing about, you know, Canada is their radio airplay, they have to have a certain percentage of Canadian artists. And so if you are a Canadian artist, you will get on Canadian radio more readily than you will if you're an American artist.
No, I had no idea. Oh, Six Blocks. So I can apparently get Six Blocks on iTunes. I wonder when that was made.
Well, before
1997.
Yeah, I was going to say that was maybe her last one.
Maybe. You know, I might just buy the album.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, I would tell anybody listening to this, if they haven't already, to go and buy it off of iTunes if you want immediacy, or buy it from the Miriam Cadell website if you want to support the art directly.
Yeah, I will buy it off of his website, Miriam Cadell's website.
I'm sorry, his website now. Yes. Her music, his website. It's crazy things.
Again, we mean no disrespect. So.
No, of course not. I hope after gushing about an album and, well, both of us gushing about one album and one of us gushing about the other album, that you understand that we're fans. We're gigantic fans.
Yeah, you ought to go get Bombazine to listen to just when you have some time, but do it on a day when it's not rainy outside or snowy and dark, which will be March, right?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, it's going to be May before it's not snowy and dark. So, yeah. So, anything else on Miriam Cadell?
No, I'm glad that he's having a good life, and I'm sorry that he's not making music still.
Well, I think that may change. I read an article where he talks about he might get back into it. Kind of, he had been flirting with the idea, and now post transition, his voice, you know, he still has a voice, but his range is a little different than it used to be. So,
well, as anybody would be anyway when they age anyway.
So. Well, exactly. So, you know, he has a different instrument to work with, if you pardon the pun, I suppose.
Wow. Yeah. Really?
Well, you know, it wasn't on purpose, but sometimes these things work out. Anyway, so yeah, so I would, are you kidding? I would buy anything that Miriam Cadell puts out. No problem.
Yeah, me too.
So, okay. Well, cool. Well, thank you for this mini-sode. We will have to find more music at a different time to thrust in, to not creep you away. We're going to thrust into your ear holes, people.
Wow.
But not in a creepy way.
Yeah, but no traumatic intercourse.
No, not at all. No, the only intercourse we have is through conversation. And if that makes you feel uncomfortable, well, then we're doing it right.
Wow.
Okay. I have no idea what I'm saying. I'm full of crap, people.
That much is clear.
Yeah, as our friend Hank would say, "Am I full of crap to the brim?" It's just all decoration, man.
Okay.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.